The Summit County Council meets tomorrow, and on the phone to give us a sneak peek, a look at that agenda is County Manager Tom Fisher. Welcome, Tom.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good. Well, let's just jump right into this. You'll get a report on the economic impacts of Sundance 2017. Does the county love Sundance, or do you worry that it's bringing too many people?
Well, I mean, if you look at it from an economic perspective, it does, and you page through the PowerPoint presentation that they're going to give tomorrow, Sundance provides such a huge economic boost to the area. I think they estimate, as I read, that the sales tax and transient room tax impact to the county overall is about $13 million, and that doesn't even count what we see at the state level, which they'll also be reporting on. So from an economic perspective, from an economy standpoint, Sundance is certainly a huge contributor to the local tourism economy.
Okay. An ordinance to memorialize an amendment to the Canyons Development Agreement for Aspen Creek Crossing. Last week, a decision was approved by just a 2-1 vote. This week, are you expecting to see last week's absent council members, Roger Armstrong and Doug Clyde? And could the council deliberate on this again?
Well, I think the ordinance is simply to memorialize the vote that was taken last week. You know, obviously, we only had 3 of our council members at the meeting last week. It's likely we'll have at least 4. Roger Armstrong is actually giving some testimony to a legislative committee tomorrow on some transportation issues. We hope that he's back for this discussion, but since both Doug and Roger missed the presentation and the deliberations last week, they may not have a whole lot to contribute.
Okay. A review of the Jeremy Area Transportation Plan. This focuses on 3 projects: improvement to the Jeremy Interchange, the park and ride near Ecker Hill Middle School, and developing the Kleindahl parcel near Jeremy Elementary. As a residential transit project, what's happening with these projects this summer, and do you need direction from the council?
Well, you know, we always want to bring as much public exposure to the big projects that we do as possible, because we know that our citizens have a lot of opinions and want to see what kind of direction that the county council is going to give on these projects. As you'll recall, the 2 transportation sales taxes that were adopted by the voters last fall, these are projects that are a direct result of that. So these projects have either been planned or have been moving through a process over the last several years. Finally, with the advent and the adoption of these sales taxes, the county has the revenue to forward these. Now, there's still a lot of work to be done. These are not ready to immediately go to design or to construction at the immediate time, although they are on a pretty fast track. We have a lot of agreements with UDOT for instance, the school district coming up that we have to deal with in order to make these projects happen. But this is kind of a first step in front of the council to get their viewpoint and get their questions answered on these projects. I'm sorry, I'm kind of in a high traffic area right now, but
you're fine. Moving on, a joint meeting with Snyderville Planning Commission. It looks like the major item is the Canyons Village, Lower Village area, where they're planning employee housing for maybe 900 to 1,100 people. The Planning Commission is considering this as part of the Canyons Master Plan Amendment, and the County Council is looking at an assessment area proposed by the developers to create infrastructure in the Lower Village. Will it be difficult for the two bodies to coordinate these items?
Well, I think that's the whole point. You know, of course, the Planning Commission has the initial look at the development agreement amendment and the master planning for the Lower Village that PCFC and the CVMA are bringing forward. So as they process that and do a lot of the legwork, nugwork on the basics of that, the County Council has also been meeting as part of the development agreement with these entities about some other issues around financing and around affordable housing. So we want to make sure that the discussions that the County Council has been having about those issues are in sync with, or at least the Planning Commission knows what the council is thinking about it. That doesn't make any decisions about these items at this point, but because, you know, all of those things have to be formalized by both the Planning Commission and the council before they're done. But we wanted to make sure that there's a good conversation going on back and forth in a public manner so that everybody's in sync.
Okay. Well, I know your time is tight this morning. You have a meeting you have to get to. Is there anything you'd like to add before I let you go?
Well, probably the biggest thing is that at this meeting, even though it's at the Richens Building, so on the west side of the county, the council will be discussing Chapters 2, the Ridgeline Ordinance, and Chapter 4 in regards to the eastern Summit County zoning code. So it's just important that people know that that's on the agenda.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it.
.com.
KPCW News Time's coming up on 8:32. You're listening to the Local News Hour. The Park City Planning Commission is scheduled to meet tomorrow, and in the studio to talk about the agenda is Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Welcome.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thank you so much for joining us. So, big deal, Treasure Hill is on the agenda with their full traffic report, correct?
That's correct. They're on the agenda, which is pretty normal for the first weekend of, or the first Wednesday meeting of every month, and it's going to continue for a while. So this Wednesday, tomorrow night, we're going to talk about the traffic study that was submitted. We're going to talk about the staff's commentary. We're going to talk about the public input to the traffic study. It's kind of an interesting conversation. I mean, there's a lot of technical aspects, and then there's a lot of qualitative aspects to it, too, that really need to be brought forward, because I really believe that the mitigation strategies that we can develop, if any, are going to deal with the qualitative sections, those things that we can see, touch, and feel, and not so much the engineering aspects of it. So right now, our comments, and you'll see them in the staff report coming basically out of the Planning Commission, is that the applicant is focused primarily on levels of service and trip generation, which are kind of the engineering science behind transportation, and not so much on mitigation and construction strategy. So we're really pushing, as the Planning Commission, to have the applicant give us some more information.
Well, I was looking at their report, and in terms of some of their mitigations, they talked about encouraging their employees to use other forms of transportation to get to
their place of employment. Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's only a suggestion.
Right. And I think that's part of the issue the Planning Commission is having. And that's part of the Planning Commission issue with the Planning Department as a whole, is that the Planning Commission makes these hard, hard decisions and requires conditions of approval that are very carefully crafted. And then sometimes we'll let them slip through the cracks. And so those mitigation strategies don't necessarily work like they're supposed to. So we've increased our focus on compliance with conditions of approval. We've added some new language into the report that the building department is delivering to the city council on code enforcement. And so you can see in Francisco Astorga's report, he's really asking, what exactly does this mean? How are you going to require it? What are the effects on transit? What are the effects on remote parking? Do we add trip generation on 224, 248? All those things need to be nailed down. So in a global context, and I think this is the message we need to get out to the public, once the conditional use permit action is taken and we either approve or deny it, the next step is a building permit. So it's very, very difficult to leave a bunch of loose ends untied to a future use or future action. We need to be really careful and concise on what we're doing at this point.
I know some of the other implementations mitigations that they're wanting to implement are an installation of a cabriolet system. And that's been a topic during some former meetings as well. Where does the Planning Commission stand on a cabriolet?
Well, I haven't heard directly from the Planning Commission. I think they've got some questions about its operational characteristics. The Planning Department has vetted cabriolet operations against the similar facility at the Canyons. We've also taken a look at the Telluride tramway system and the Breckenridge tramway system, taken a look at their hours of operation, see how they function for employees, taking a look at see what it does to the transit systems in both locations. I think the Telluride model is probably more apropos at this point. It's way, way, way bigger than the one that Treasure Hill is proposing, but I think the operational characteristics are similar.
Aside from the report, are they going to have any visuals for the Planning Commission? Or?
It's pretty tough to take pictures of traffic. I'm sure the public will have pictures of crowded roads and snow removal, and I think that's perfectly appropriate as well.
Yeah, I thought about all the stories that I've heard at the Planning Commission meetings from the public about the narrowness of the roads, et cetera. Was that addressed in the traffic report? I didn't see
anything.
Not yet,
no. And that's part of the discussion that we're having and the Planning Commission is struggling with is that, as I said before, traffic engineering is a science. And they are standards. And if you calculate to the standards, it's hard to dispute that kind of information. On the other hand, there's all this qualitative information saying, how does level of service function when it's snowing 2 inches an hour? How does level of service function when we have cars parked 2 feet into the street because snow removal has not had a chance to push to the curb yet? What are all these other attributes that are going on? What happens when a service vehicle doesn't have its chains on and all of a sudden we're trying to move several dozen people up or down to the hotel at any one point in time? Those are qualitative aspects that the Planning Commission is working hard on. I do want to put a message out there to everybody that we are seriously considering and right now are in the hard conversation process about having a third-party review of the traffic and transportation studies, primarily for the qualitative aspects and potential mitigation strategies. So we think that that's a good idea. Any way this goes, whether you get 10 traffic engineers or one traffic engineer or just me, half the people aren't going to like the answer. And so we've got to do the best job we can to come up with a strategy for this.
Well, thinking about those narrow streets, there was a semi-trailer that turned over just on Marsac right above City Hall a couple of weeks ago and ran into one of the homes there. So are those roads more narrow than Marsac that go up to Treasure?
I guess I'd have to look and make sure that they're narrower. They're about the same size. I think that stretch of Marsac above where that accident occurred is actually steeper than the three vertical curves we have on Lowell Avenue. Actually the Planning Commission was standing outside when that accident occurred and we were having a conversation and actually heard the crash and kind of decided, well, it wasn't really anything. And then we kind of walked up there and took a look. So it was brought home pretty clearly to a couple of Planning Commissioners that these situations occur. The main difference is that Marsac Avenue has about a 2 mile downhill, not including the Deer Valley Connector or the Empire Pass section of the road. So that's 2 miles of straight downhill stretch, somewhere between 10 and 14%, perhaps steeper. Whereas if you're at the top of Lowell Empire, there is no uphill of that. That's as much as you get. So there's some differences there that are going to affect how operations take place.
Okay, moving on. 1302 Norfolk, the owners are appealing the decision that against demolition. They want to demolish their...
Right. Well, this is indicative of the difficult work that our Planning Commission and, you know, truthfully, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission and the East Side folks face as well. These are hard, hard decisions. And this is a two-part one at 1302 Norfolk. This is on the north side of the library field. It's kind of hidden behind the trees and hidden behind one of the stairways. And so the house was never listed on the historic sites inventory because the first two or three inventories were windshield surveys, and so they never saw the building. And the building had been modified considerably in the 60s. So last Wednesday night, the Historic Preservation Board nominated to the historic sites inventory and made a determination that it was historic. So there was no way we could issue a building permit for demolition until we determined whether the house was historic or not. Therefore, we had to turn down the demolition permit. Now, if they want to demolish, they can either appeal the Historic Preservation Board action or they can go after a certificate of appropriateness for demolition and go ahead and tear it down. Either way, right now it's on the list, and you have to go and not preserve it, but you have to reconstruct it in its historic form.
So the staff's application predates the owner's application for demolition, correct?
I guess I'd have to look. Yes.
It's what it says in the staff
report. Right, right. And there's two, you know, the staff had to make an application to get it on the historic sites inventory, and the community development director had to make a determination not to issue the building permit for demolition. So this is a bit of a complex discussion, and it has everything to do with preserving the quality of our historic homes, because this house is not in the historic district. It's in the resort commercial district, but it has a significant influence on the historic nature of the library field and the other historic homes that are in the neighborhood. So it's a contextual question, plus this is one of the few homes that was constructed in the 1920s, so it's indicative of the mining decline era when folks were really struggling to build houses here. There's two, maybe three of this style of home throughout the town. One is in the historic district that I'm familiar with, now the second one, and I'll bet there's a third one. I just haven't found it yet.
So how successful are people when they appeal these decisions that for the historic district to appeal so that they can demolish them?
We've had a couple be taken off the historic sites inventory in the last year. Basically, the Historic Preservation Board has to make a determination that there's nothing left of the structure that's historic and it cannot be returned to its original historic form. That's the decision the HPB makes. And that's a complicated decision because we have some of the houses, and you're going to see another appeal coming up here on the 20th at 569 Park about whether the house is historic or not and whether or not we can issue a permit for demolition on that one. So, and that has a complicated argument about what's remaining of the historic structure, and it may come down to whether or not the roof joists are historic or not. So that's another complex decision that our folks are facing.
Okay. And then, you know, it's election season here in Park City.
Oh, yes.
And we have Steve Joyce, who's on the Planning Commission. He's going to run for city council, which means you have his seat available. And I think you said you have four others whose terms are
up. I believe we've got four others whose terms are up this year. So we'll be looking to either reappoint those members or go ahead and select some new members. We'll be going out in July, maybe August, because we really want the board to stay in place until some of these larger planning decisions are made. We really believe the history and the continuity of the current Planning Commission is important as we make these bigger decisions going forward. So the mayor's reached out to the folks and asked them to remain in place for a while. And the Land Management Code allows that by saying that the members will be in office until they're appointed, new appointments are replaced and trained. And so we have the code to do it, and we'd like our planning commissioners to stay for a while.
So their terms are up at the end of the year?
I believe it's September, Melissa. I'd have to look.
Oh, okay. So, and that's right around when Treasurer thinks they might want a decision.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's true, too. We'll see. September's a long way off for us.
Okay. Well, it's right around the corner for me.
Yes, yes.
Is there anything else you'd like to add before I let you go?
Well, we've got a couple other things coming up on the agenda tomorrow night. You know, we're going to do a little subdivision for the film studio. That will help them move ahead with some financing issues. 1450, 1460 Park Avenue, which is the city's reconstruction of historic buildings and six new affordable units. We're going to go ahead and postpone that for them, or a continuance for them, but that'll be coming back, and that'll be the last action. They've come forward with a new parking plan that meets the Land Management Code, and the Planning Commission's being asked to weigh in on that. It comes off of Sullivan Road, which is the main road that serves Park City Park, and it is not a city street. It's a driveway. And so that has some different characteristics. And the Planning Department, and I believe the Planning Commission, is very concerned about any of the parking off Sullivan Road leaking over into the park parking and folks parking there overnight. You know, we don't have the folks, except perhaps me, just coming home at 2 in the morning to have a look and see who's parking illegally in the city park parking lot. So, and at 2 in the morning, I'm not prepared to enforce. So,
you know, it seems like with all the talk about parking, I can't help but think of New York, where parking is like prime real estate.
Right, and it's prime in almost any resort town. We've heard stories about folks in Vail selling parking spaces in the parking garage for tens of thousands of dollars. And, you know, I'm not an urban person. I don't go to big cities. I'm a resort person, but I can imagine what it costs to park in San Francisco.
Wow. Yeah, I guess so. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming in, Bruce.
Thank you, Melissa.
The Park City Market has a monthly lunch and learn program that is free to the public and meets tomorrow at noon. This month's featured guest is self-proclaimed certified food and health geek, Kayleen McCrary. She's on the phone with us to give us a taste of what she has planned for tomorrow's presentation. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for calling in. So before we get to... before we get to the rest of our conversation, tell us what a self-proclaimed certified food and health geek does.
I've just always been a foodie. I've always enjoyed food. I've always been very interested in how food can naturally heal the body. So I'm actually a certified nutritional therapy practitioner, and I'm a GAPS practitioner, and I've had some wonderful advanced training in treating Hashimoto's, which I shouldn't use the word treating, it's really not allowed, but helping support people who are dealing with autoimmune thyroiditis using diet and supplementation.
And GAPS, what is that?
GAPS is it's a protocol that's used to help children who are dealing with autism or are on the autism spectrum.
Okay. So getting to your presentation tomorrow, it's mostly about environmental toxins, and you're a foodie. So how do these two relate?
Well, a lot of people don't realize that our food, the stuff that we call food oftentimes isn't food at all. And very often the foods that we do eat are contaminated with many types of environmental toxins. So I don't think people realize just how much they're actually getting in their diet. So I feel like it's very important with my clients, I think it's very important to educate them so that they can make choices that support health and don't degrade their health over time. Toxins often build up. It's not something where you eat something and then you're acutely ill from it unless it's food poisoning. But toxins are on our foods from sprays and it's in our water and it's in our air. It's you know, they're ubiquitous. They're everywhere. And so a lot of times, people are totally unaware of what they're doing to their body when they're eating or consuming some of these, taking these toxins in.
So how do we counteract the effects? If it's in our air and our water and in our food, what can we do to be healthy?
We can learn how to eat right. We can learn how to choose foods that have been, like, for example, just simply buying organic is one of the easiest ways to. You know, it's never 100% guarantee, but I can promise you it's going to cut way back on toxins that you would be consuming. You know, once in a while you'll get foods that are certified organic that might have something on them that shouldn't be there, but that's not the norm. There's not a whole lot we can do about our air. I live down in Draper, so I have to deal with air pollution. You guys are lucky in Park City. You don't really have that problem as much. The air pollution does get up there, though, and so, you know, there's not a lot you can do about that other than choosing carefully where you live. But you can also, you can filter your water, make sure your water has toxins pulled out of it before you drink it. And that's probably another really huge source of toxins that we take in without realizing it. For example, a lot of people think that fluoride is really good for us and it keeps our teeth strong. Really what keeps our teeth strong is a good, healthy diet. Fluoride is a toxin. So
what can we do to support our body's natural detoxification process?
There are certain types of protocols that we can look at. I mean, a person's ability to detoxify is different from individual to individual. Most of us have a little bit of a problem, detoxifying from the toxins in our environment because there are so many and most of us have a buildup. Our liver is our main organ of detoxification, and for a lot of people, it's very congested. So, you know, we have to look at the individual. But eliminating the sources and then using supplementation, there are certain supplements that are very helpful. glutathione is a great supplement for that. And some other things that we can do. I mean, I don't know how much time we have to get into it, but there are lots of things that can be done. Just, you know, the biggest thing is limiting the intake of it. Figuring out where the toxins are and avoiding them is the simplest way. And your body will detoxify naturally if it doesn't keep getting bombarded. It's going to be able to do quite a lot of detoxification on its own.
So when you give these presentations, what surprises people the most from the information that you share?
Gosh, I'm not sure about that, but I'll tell you what surprised me the most when I started doing my research was just how much toxins we have in our environment today. There was a very recent study I read, and this actually knocked my socks off. Over 260 pounds of environmental toxins come in. Let me go back. It's over 260 pounds per person per day of environmental toxins come into the United States from outside. That would be toxins that are in, for example, our housing material that's manufactured, or our furniture, or our foods, or it's huge. And people just don't realize how we keep adding to it instead of the corporations that make these chemicals cutting back. They're pushing to make more and bring more into the environment. We can live without these chemicals. We've lived very well without these chemicals in our environment for many, many, many eons. And, you know, we're completely changing the face of the planet by allowing this to continue. So that's a lot. 260 pounds per person per day come into the U.S. that are toxins.
So, you know, unlike plastic bags and bottles and things like that, you can't really see environmental toxins. What red flags can people look for if they want to be more aware of what they're bringing in?
Well, I guess I would have to say they need to see how they feel. If they think they're eating well and they're, you know, doing everything that they can do to take care of themselves. I know Park City people tend to be really tuned into health and wellness. But if you're doing everything that's right and you still feel like crap, then you got to look at what's going on. You got to reevaluate. Is there a source of contamination? You know, I didn't mention the fact that sometimes people are poisoned by even the pipes that their water is coming through. If there's lead solder, sometimes there's copper toxicity. You know, you just have to look at how you feel. If you think you're doing everything right, but you still feel, you know, not your optimal best, then you got to consider that maybe there's a toxic burden that you're carrying around that your body is not able to eliminate.
So at the Marks website, in their introduction for your event tomorrow, they say that you're going to be sharing some new and exciting information regarding the environmental toxins. What is new and exciting about environmental toxins?
Well, I don't know that there's anything especially exciting about them, but it is nice to know, you know, for example, there are about 2,000 new chemicals that are introduced into the environment every year. That's outrageous. 2,000 new chemicals every year. We have between 80,000 and 100,000 chemicals that are used regularly in this country.
So I'm starting to get a little defeated, feeling, you know, like overwhelmed with all of these things that are coming in. What do you tell people when in these presentations to empower them and to help them move forward and not just give up and say, oh, that's too much, forget it, I'm going to die anyway?
You know, it does feel a little bit overwhelming. I know when I first started studying this, it was like, gosh, what, I need to move. I can't live here anymore. I got to find a place on the planet that's clean. But we can't do that. You know, that's just not practical. The very best thing we can do is educate ourselves. And are we going to be able to eliminate all the toxins? Well, that's not going to happen in this world because it's not perfect. So eliminating as many of the toxins as we can, and we can only do that if we're educated, if we know where they're coming from, where we're getting them, where we're picking them up. If we can eliminate as many as we can do quite well. Humans, like I said before, are able to naturally detoxify. We struggle to detoxify when when we end up with a body burden or a load of toxins in our body that reaches a certain level, that now our detoxification processes aren't working well. So the very best way, like I said before, is to understand where they're coming from and eliminate them that through that process. Get rid of them. So if a person's drinking tap water, I'm going to tell them, you know, seriously consider a high-quality water filter so you can filter out those toxins. What's one thing we have to have every single day? We've got to have water. We've got to have food. So we can clean our water. We can put a whole house filter on if we, you know, have the funds to do that, or we can, you know, just put one on our tap in the kitchen. We can put filters on our shower so we're not getting the chlorine. There are lots of things that we can do that will really improve the quality of our life. In the wintertime down here, I put air filters in my house so that at least I have good clean air in my home, you know, because we do have the inversions that are so bad. Making sure that we're buying organic food as much as possible. What foods can we get away with that are not organic would be thick-skinned fruits like avocados and bananas, but the thinner-skinned fruits like strawberries and a real dirty vegetable is spinach. I think that one tops the list right now. So I personally don't buy spinach unless it's organic. I don't want my family consuming that. You know, so getting educated is really the best way to make sure you're doing what you can to take care of yourself and make sure that, you know, you don't create a burden that your body can't handle. And I'm a bit of an activist. I try to encourage people to write their legislature when they have time, asking them to consider, you know, not supporting certain bills that are, you know, brought up. It helps if people get involved.
Well, before I let you go, is there anything you'd like to add about tomorrow's event?
No, I guess not. I just please come and show up and learn what you can so you can take care of yourselves and your family. This is a great opportunity to, you know, get that information that's not always readily available out there. Environmental toxins are ubiquitous. They're everywhere, and they're just not addressed like they really need to be addressed.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And it starts tomorrow at noon at the Mark, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.